started. It is Tuesday, October 1st at 7:00 PM. We are being here for a council meeting to see your post meeting center. We are going to start with the pledge led by Councilmember Bailey, and then I will.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And we follow the opportunity that we have tonight together as citizens of this great city. We're grateful for the many that surround us and for the many people who serve in a variety of capacities to make this community what it is, what it puts to where it stands. We ask you to please bless us at this meeting as we discuss the needs of the city, that our hearts and minds will be open to make decisions that will benefit us now and in the long term. And we pray for these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. All right, we move on to item number 3, which is the public comment portion of our meeting. No sign up. Okay. Anybody here that didn't sign up that wants to speak in public comment? What's that? Oh, we did not. Sorry. Item number 2, actually, is an approval of the meeting's agenda. If somebody wants to make that motion. I will, since I brought it up. Thank you. I move that we approve the meeting's agenda. I have a motion here by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Getz. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. So we will close the public comment portion since no one's here to speak. And move on to the consent agenda, which is an approval of the minutes from the August 27th community work session of City Council meeting and September 10th. 2019 City Council meeting. I move that we approve the consent agenda. Motion by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second? Second by Councilmember Bailey. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passed unanimously. We move on to items 5 and 6, which are city reports of business, starting with Mr. Bailey.
Yes, quick report on the rec programs. Currently, we have in progress flag football, team flag football, soccer, and tot soccer. And then for those that are interested, junior jazz registration is now opened up, and ski bus is open. And we've switched our ski bus program this year. So rather than 3 Saturday mornings at Snowbird, we're doing 4 Saturday nights at Brighton. So
nights.
So hopefully it opens up some of those kids that want to have to choose between basketball and ski bus. They can do both now. AF Canyon construction is ongoing. There's a fiber project going up the canyon. Expect delays up there through November. The American Fork Fire is going to be hosting an open house at our building on October 16th. We're going to be sending out updates in the weekly update and the website and social media, so look for that. That should be a good opportunity for the public to get to know the firefighters and to kind of understand some of the services that they offer.
It's not fall break. It's a lot of people moving on.
We can have them do it again. I think it is, yeah.
What's the day on that?
October 16th. I think it's
a lot of people on this map. When is it to go? The 16th? October 16th? Yeah, it is. Well, it's Wednesday, right before fall break.
What's
so fall break is Thursday, right? Okay.
And then Harvey Park, we've come a long way on Harvey Park, and if you're driving by and you'd like a walkthrough, take a look, a little closer look. I'm happy to schedule a time for any of you to walk through the park. It's really, really quite an amazing park. I walked through it on Friday with Jeff, Charles, and Greg, and I really want to commend them and Kevin is here as well. He's done some of the inspections. I really want to commend staff for the designing, the planning, and the financing, and the work that they've done. It's really going to be an incredible addition to our community. That's all I have.
Thank you. Councilmember Getz.
No, all I can say is I drive by that park every day because I live there, and it looks like it's really coming along great. So thank you, everybody. Nice to see you out there meeting weekly. It looks like we're getting a phenomenal amount of stuff. I think it's more than what at least I anticipated, and I think the community anticipated. So thank you, everybody that's been involved with that.
Councilmember Anderson. The only thing I have, remember a couple years ago we agreed to pay the people that own those homes on Harvey, Morgan Boulevard, whose basement flooded. We gave them money to clean up their basements and place over their insurance on it. So I've been curious about how they're doing. So I've been going over and talking to these people just to find out
how, if they're happy with what happened. I go to these two ladies' houses all the time, they're never home, so I've been able to talk to two of the owners. And they are so grateful to the city and have nothing but good things to say. They were able to put their homes back together and they're just very grateful to the city. So I wanted to pass that along. Sometimes you don't hear what happens after the fact when something like that happens. So after I talk to my other two ladies, I'll let you know how they feel about it. But the other two owners are super happy.
Great. So, quick question. You just randomly went and knocked on their door?
Knocked on their doors. Well, one of them is a rental, so the owner lives in town. So I knocked on his door where he lives, and yeah, just wanted to know.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. Anything else? Okay. On mine, we do a short ULCT. Sorry, I'm a few things that we're going to be talking about in the near future. I think you guys are all aware that the state is really pushing water conservation. And part of that is looking at our own requirements that we have for landscaping. So one of the things that Tyler and I talked about that will have to come to the council is one of the sessions I went to talked about some of the easy things you can do, and they had this program called Flip Your Strip, which is changing your park strip from grass to their
Rock,
pavers or whatever the case is, but our current ordinance doesn't allow people to do that. So if we want to start allowing people to make those small transitions, we're going to have to update our landscaping ordinance. Yes. So that and some other water-wise planning. The other thing that we should look at is right now, and this will be a discussion from the council, but right now in our commercial zone, we require businesses to put in 30% landscaping. But that's a lot of water to use when it's not usable grass area. So another thing we need to talk about is, do we want to modify that landscape requirement for commercial businesses so that way they're using less water on these commercial flats where it's not?
Is that something you'd like to start now, or you want to do that after our January meeting there?
Well, let's talk about it as a council.
I think let's do it as soon as we can.
It's going to take some time. Does that have to be planning commission?
Yeah, that's a Title 10 item, so it would need to start in the planning commission. I think that it's worth maybe hearing some of your thoughts, your feedback, so that it's not just a stale discussion at the planning commission, because they may not completely understand where the state's going in terms of water conservation, and they may want to know what direction the city council wants to take the city in. So with some clear direction, I can begin that process with the planning commission.
And the Division of Water Resources has come out with their preliminary plan, statewide new conservation goals, and Utah County has the highest percentage of conservation requirements. I think it's 18% that they want us to reduce.
That's it?
Something I thought was higher than the original.
I think you're right.
Anyway, the Utah County are saying has the greatest opportunity for conservation, and so meaning that there are more areas of watering that don't necessarily need to be watered. So anyway, what do you guys feel about having planning commission take that on? Are you guys fine with reducing that requirement in commercial park strips, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, we have a discussion right now on that next time. Walkthroughs might be
can you do that? I think it's smart to do it now, sooner rather than later, because in the spring people start doing projects.
Yes.
In their yards, and that they're open back to that, and do that.
Yes.
So.
What we can do is we can have this as a discussion item on the October 15th agenda. We can take it to the Planning Commission this month, probably as a discussion item. Have them share some thoughts, and then in November pass something, so that in December and January it comes back to the City Council for approval. So it can be done in plenty of time for spring.
So, I mean that. If we're going to kind of revise our, it's a little late now, our city's almost built out, but if we were to go back and start over again, we have a lot of neighborhoods that have curb adjacent sidewalks. So in fact, the only ones I think that are not curb adjacent are like through the Cedars. And is there a few others? Like Kagan Heights and stuff, is that?
Well, I think they mostly have park strips up there.
Yeah. Most of it's Cedars.
Mostly the Cedars. So,
I have parks on Bay Hill. I don't want to leave it though.
Yeah, and all the area where I live is all just sidewalk adjacent, curb to curb. So the only other thing I would like, and maybe going forward, we're still going to have some little bit of development. I would like to see us at least require a tree or two in our front yards. So 20 years later, on my neighborhood, you know, a few people put trees in, but they put trees in, like a tree, like a street type of tree, it would look like some of the cedars does. And it would just provide shade and goodness.
We do have a very specific list of trees that can be planted in a planter strip because based on how those roots grow, they'll ruin your sidewalk quickly. So we can look at that, what's actually being required in the park strip, but also is that as well. That might be a little bit hard to do retroactively, though.
No, I understand that. It's just saying that,
I see.
If you notice some of like a couple neighborhoods in PG, like by the Vanilla Ponds, you know, those trees that are in their park strips are phenomenal right now. And it's a shame that a lot of our city doesn't have them because it wasn't required. And people never put a tree in their front yard, which, I mean, that's good property. It would have been nice to have required it at the time.
Okay, so we'll have this discussion item. So any other water-wise things that you look at in our code that you think we should change, just to be prepared to discuss that in our next meeting? One of the things that ULCT did warn us during the business session was that affordable housing is a big topic throughout the state. We are currently in touch with SB 34, but there is a feeling up the hill that cities aren't doing enough. And some of the things that ULCT specifically said is that there is a feeling from some legislators that cities cannot make the hard decisions when it comes to zoning. And so there are discussions about taking zoning authority away from cities, about changing who the land use appeal authority is, and in holding not only cities but elected officials personally liable for voting in ways that are contrary to their general plan. So, yes.
Personally liable
if you vote in a way that's contrary to what your plan says. So, as UOCT is sending out their weekly emails through the legislative session, pay attention to those because I know they're going to be asking for cities to reach out to legislators fighting against those opportunities from the state to take away more authority of cities to be able to follow through on their own land use policy. And then the last thing is as you know from the monthly management report you get, we are having many issues continually at Timbersville Park. I just speak with a resident who lives up near there who's having some issues. So American Fork Police, it's been great to work with us. They are actually going to, there's a gate there, and they are going to lock that gate at night and Fork Works open in the morning until we can figure out a better solution and control it. But for now, the gate will be locked at night because of events and other things that are happening back to the municipal park. That's all I have for now. Pass over to you. Pass over to Miller. Pass over to Miller. Okay, thank you. So we move on to item number 7, which is a review action on amendments to the personnel policies and procedures manual.
Fill up my trash.
Okay. So based on city code, the city staff has policies and procedures manual that governs, dictates the administration of the city, sets guidelines for the staff on how we operate and basically rules it. In the past, there's been updates to the policies and procedures manual, and I think that it passed sort of treated as an internal house item. Looking at the code, I don't feel like that's the appropriate way to approach not update with policies and procedures. Even though my job is to act as the administrative officer for the city, I do report to the city council and mayor, so I think it's important that the city council elected officials understand what the policies and procedures are. So the city code states that the city council is tasked with prescribing the rules and regulations for the administration of the city, and I'm the city manager, I'm tasked with carrying out the policy for the administration of the city. So Gretchen and I, we've been working on this for a while, and we kind of put a pause on it, and we thought that the best way to probably do this would be to get engagement from various departments, not necessarily just the department heads, but various members of the department that had vested interest or had shown interest in the policies and procedures. Because each policy change has the potential to affect each department in a mildly different way. So we wanted to be consistent and take into account all of the various views that we could. So we put together a staff committee, and we met periodically over the last few months, and we put together these proposed changes. I want to go through them quickly. Currently, there's no policy. The first one there, so we put together this worksheet on the old policy, what the policy is, what the proposed addition is, and why we want to do it. The policy is on hiring new employees. We currently don't have a residency requirement on employment here. We're not proposing one. Other than that, which is dictated by city code, which the only position is mine. But we want to make sure that employees are aware that certain positions may require residency within a certain range. This came about because we had an internal informal policy that public works employees have to live within 30 minutes of the city. And that is becoming increasingly difficult for them to find housing within 30 minutes of the city. So we needed to really evaluate that. The second policy, if there's any questions or you want to interject at any time, I'm going to move through this. So if you have something you want to speak out about a specific policy, please interrupt. The second one is on sexual harassment. We wanted to add a policy on non-practicalization that employees should avoid situations where a conflict of interest may arise where between relationships that may claim in favoritism or harassment, prohibiting relationships between persons in management and within their scope of influence. The second change to sexual gender harassment would be that if all reporting is formal, there's a specific section in our policies that talks about informal reporting or informal action. In today's climate, I don't feel like that's a safe route. I think you have to document any sort of claim that's made. So we want to formalize all action and all reports. Those are kept separate from the employees' personnel files in America, but we feel like that's important. It's based on recommendation from Kurt Conkey, attorney, Joel, and other individuals we've worked with. Third one was employee code of conduct. We had some employees that wanted to address workplace appearance. So we wanted to talk about what's expected in terms of dress, in terms of possibly tattoos, and how they are visible. Really, it comes down to if it's offensive. C in item C, there's three things that would prohibit this type of various types of appearances. One is that if the personal safety of the self or the others are damaged or cause damage to city property, productivity or performance expectations are not met. The third one is it's offensive to coworkers, customers, vendors, or others in the workplace based on racial, sexual, religious, ethnic, or other characteristic or attributes of a sensitive or legally protected nature. There was some vague language if it was offensive, but there's something about if it was offensive to the norms in the area, and I thought that was too vague. These policies are coming from other policies that we work with. We work with Limbus Insurance. They provide us some access to draft policies, and we've taken them and worked with them and modified them to help us as best we can. Next one down in section 7, it says employee code of conduct, authorized use of public property. This is in response to House Bill 163 from the last legislative session. This bill is problematic. I've heard rumors that the state will address it. Basically, it creates a situation where if you were to take a pen or palm, you could be prosecuted. Is this a felony? It's a felony, yes. It's pretty drastic.
You know what?
For anything, if I take an unauthorized pen home, it's a felony. So it really opens up the door for a lot of potential problems. So we went through that bill and we took some language that others have used. It says authorized personal use means that the employee is authorized to use or possess the public property to fulfill the employee's assigned duties, and that the employee uses and possesses the public property in a lawful manner. Use of public property is considered incidental if the value provided by the employee's use substantially outweighs personal benefit received and is not prohibited by law or by the city. So I guess my example of a pen, I can take it home and write in my diary and bring it back and write in my work order. But it is problematic, so we're going to watch that bill, how that's being addressed. I know there's a lot of entities that have voiced some real concerns about the way that this legislature The next one down is privileges of employment. In the past, we've let employees use the Vista room one time, so one of the benefits they can use the Vista room one time for a cost of $250, narrow when they can use it. $250 covers what costs the city's not going back as well. We've had people question who that is, who's an employee in that case, so we want to narrow that down to permanent employees have that ability. And the Vista room rental becomes available when an employee has been in a permanent position for at least 6 months, and an employee must be an active permanent employee at the time of the scheduled event as well. So they can't just work for 6 months. Schedule that. They can go ahead and have that.
So an elected official is not a permanent employee because there's a time limit on their term?
Yes, so. And then this next policy is on continuing education. We've had this the current policy on continuing education, and we've had a number of staff members that have been interested in pursuing degrees, and which I think is just a fantastic thing. It really provides a valuable resource to the pending on the degree. It can provide a real resource to the city. So we've had in last year we had two employees that took advantage of this, but we wanted to clarify it because it was a little bit vague and we wanted to set some limits. And so the limits we set were that the city's not going to reimburse more than 50% of the employee's tuition. All the reimbursements shall be based on available funding. So even though we qualify for it, if it ruins the budget or it stresses the budget, we're not. The fiscal health of the city matters more. And finally, that the reimbursement shall not exceed $2,500 per fiscal year per employee. So we need cap on that as well. By taking advantage of this, they do sign something that says that they intend to stay with the city for another 18 months. Or else the city can't reimburse them. The next one was policy on cybersecurity and information protection. This is some healthy verbiage, but basically it set some guidelines on how to protect personally identifiable information as recognized by the state of Utah, which would be social security numbers, driver's license numbers, and how we save that information, whether it's employees, residents, members, want to make sure that we're being protected with that. And the next one down here is the procurement. This came about from after the ULCT conference in spring. We went down there and the former director of FEMA spoke, talked about emergency management, and then the city needs to have, in the case of emergency, should have the ability to procure goods and services, whatever it needs, up to a certain amount. So in this case, we've said that when the city manager or the mayor declares that there's a state of emergency in existence, that authorizes staff to bypass some of the procurement rules that we've outlined in our code, getting bids on a number of items up to $100,000 in order to alleviate the emergency. Past that $100,000, at that point, the city would really be working with county, state, and federal officials on seeking additional aid. So they wanted to make sure this was clearly delineated in our policies. And then the last page there, you can see that there's a number of other minor changes in terms of these are just the biggest updates that we've done. It's really that big. But if you have any questions about it, I'm happy to go over it. If any questions about the policies and procedures manual, we've never really gone over this with the council, so it might be a lot to think about. I went through it really fast, so any questions we have to talk about.
I've heard that they're also going to address page 8163. It's bad that I work in this county. There's a large county policy that indicated that, hey, this is bad, we're going to have to ignore it, set our own policy. I think it's appropriate to kind of close its face. Rest of that.
Well, this is a review action item, so I will take a motion.
I will make a motion that we approve the proposed changes to the City of Cedar Hills Policies and Procedures Manual, subject to no changes.
Motion by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Holtzman. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Moving on to item number 8 is a discussion on fiscal year 2020 budget and budgeting projections into the fiscal year 2021. So I'm going to just start off real quick by saying I asked Chandler to put this on the agenda as we've been talking about, as Chandler and I have been talking about some of the things that are on our radar for the next couple of years and where we're sitting as a city with really no new revenue coming in. So this is kind of Chandler and Charlotte have been looking into the future for the next couple of years to identify some of the challenges that we're up against so we can have a discussion on how we're going to start meeting those needs that we have coming up.
Well said. Before I get into this, this isn't roses. But it's also not doom and gloom. We're not defaulting on a bond. We're not going bankrupt. I just want you to be aware of some of the challenges that we're facing because we're operating on a tighter and tighter system. So I want to share some information that we've been looking at in terms of where we go going forward. First of all, part of my role as a city manager is to advise on the financial condition of the city and the future needs of the city and to make recommendations to the legislative body as we deem necessary or expedient. And as the mayor said, we're a community of limited growth. If you look at what's happening in the city, we have 80 homes and going in, this is a huge growth for us. But if you were to look at our neighbors, that sounds like the month of June to them. So once this is done, I mean, there's not a lot of new projected revenues, you know, and with but the issue that how this came about is we started looking at the budget based on the current budget. We looked at the park maintenance. You know, Harvey has been we're excited about the opening of Harvey Park. It also presents a really unique challenge to city staff in that it's got a number of new features that we are not currently found in the city. And how do we take care of those? You know, so we don't have a splash pad. How do we take care of the splash pad? And I will say that I think that we designed a splash pad that is easily maintained compared to some of the other around us. But it's got pickleball courts, it's got tennis courts, it's got a basketball courts, it's got a big playground structure. It's got a lot of these things, and like I said, it's a really impressive park. But it does present some challenges to staff. Additionally, the part of the discussion is about how do we maintain our parks and our public spaces in general. And for the last, I don't know, 20 years, I'm using Chris?
2003, I believe, okay. So 15 years.
15 years. 15, 16 years we've been using Chris Wilkinson. He's done a fantastic job. But based on our projections, we're getting to a point where it's crossed the threshold and it's probably easier for us and cheaper for us on the budget to do it ourselves. And so we're looking at, right now we currently have about 40-ish acres that he maintains. Harvey Park's adding another 11 and a half acres of land. So this last budget year that we did, we budgeted for what its maintenance to be maintaining the city for the first 6 months, so up to January. Past that, we would then take it over. And I know we've had that discussion here in the past. This transition, I know we've had a number of proposals. We've worked with an idea of golf taking it over. We've thrown out ideas of how it works taking it over and how it makes the most sense going forward in the city. And up until the last couple of days, any proposal has given me a little bit of a gut ache because I didn't feel like we were quite where we needed to be able to maintain parks and a level of service that I feel like the community's come to expect. So Charles and I sat down and we've got a proposal I think it works. But it does mean that we are going to have to terminate our agreement with Chris Wilkinson. I think that was made clear. And we looked at what it would take to keep Chris in sight for the current budget year, and then what would it look like for our general fund, because his money is all paid out of the general fund. Then what it would look like if we were to pay Chris out of the general fund next year. In order to add this is not in the budget, but the this. So if we were to amend the budget in order to add Chris back in the budget for the general fund for the rest of this year, it would lead to about a $68,000 shortfall in the general fund. That's up tight here. If we were to add his contract in next year with the addition of Harvey Park and with his contractual inflation, it would be about $100,000 shortfall. This is a problem. So we put together a solution where we feel like we have the manpower to take this over, and we've been really lucky, is probably the best word, that we've been able to get Kevin here from Sandy Oregon. Kevin's right here. Kevin has a lot of experience in maintaining parks, and so he's been very instrumental in putting together proposal that works within our current budget so that we're not going backwards, so that next year we're not facing $100,000 shortfall. However, with that being said, there is still, things are tight. So I want to kind of talk about how we got here and where we go. So this is for the budget trends. And I'm going to go back and talk about public safety. In 2018, the budget year there, we paid American Fork Police $420,591. We paid Lone Peak Fire $680,496. Then dispatch had another 36. The total for public safety was $1,137,000. That next year, Lone Peak proved a very large increase in the budget. Now that money comes all from, that money's paid all out of the general fund. But that money, that Lone Peak's expenses went from $680,000 to $783,000. That's an increase of $103,000 in a year where we were only expecting about $100,000 in new revenue in the general fund. We did raise public safety fees that year. That covered about $30,000 of it. The rest of it was recognized as the new money from the general fund. This next budget year, Lone Peak went from, we switched from Lone Peak to American Fork. That fire money went from $783,000 down to $699,000. So there was savings there of about $84,000. However, police went from $423,000 to $542,000. So any savings we had in fire was immediately taken up to pay for the increases, which I might add, these are still the most cost-effective ways to provide public safety to our community. And I think that is necessary to add here. That increase, so in 2020, we were estimating about $85,000 in new general fund money. Half of that was new money allocated to pay for increases in recycling. Lone Peak rent, which is this, I still don't really understand it, but it was we pay them and then they pay us for the use of our building. That was $58,000 that we recognized as revenue, which we no longer can recognize as revenue. So all of a sudden, there's $58,000 that we're not getting.
Plus, we added $10,000 in utility costs. So the fire was really a wash.
Say that again, please.
The fire cost was a wash for that year, but it was still way better than the alternative for the future.
Yes. And then in this next budget year, we also recognized an increase of $81,000 in sales tax. So you have an increase of $81,000 in sales tax, you have a decrease in your revenues for $58,000. So I guess the point I'm making is that one other thing let me add to sales tax is that the state has now set a precedent where they are willing to come in and take a portion of that. I think it was 2 years ago now. They said we're going to take 1% of your sales tax and we're going to fund public safety up in these communities up in Salt Lake where they have homeless shelters. So already they've set a precedent, and that 1% to us meant, I think, about $20,000 to $25,000. And then we've seen, and I know you've heard this, and I know we talked about it, but all economic indicators in the economy right now
show a potential downtrend slope. We don't know if it's going to be a full blown recession, we don't know if it's going to be just a simple pump the brakes. But what we've seen in the last 4 months, our sales tax have been flat. For a while, they were above, they were trending above what was you would receive the previous year, but now they're simply what we have received this year. So we are projecting to hit our revenues, but the increases, looking at budgeted increases for next year, for the fiscal year 2021, I don't know that we can count on $81,000. If there is a downturn in the economy, I think you look at the elasticity of demand on certain revenues that you have, and sales tax is something that takes a dip. Our passport revenue is something that we feel would take a dip, as well as our care tax. These are all based on the ability to expend money in a vibrant economy.
John, can I just...
Please do.
For sales tax, the last 4 months have been up and down, and it's just been a wash. When I met with you last January, we were up about 40-something thousand at our retreat. It stayed that amount for the rest of the year. We never went above that. So we've been flat since about January. So that's just something to keep in mind that's been. And as we were talking about, we found a solution to do maintenance, but still we aren't structurally deficit this year, but we, instead of a $100,000 deficit, we'd have about a $20,000 structural deficit we'll have to work through to start next year without any inflation. So that's just something to keep in mind.
But a $20,000 structural deficit is a lot easier to work through than $100,000. Finding ways to cut $20,000 out of our budget is easier than $100,000. So let me just talk about general fund revenues for a second. Motor vehicle has seen a big decrease. Motor vehicle taxes have seen a big decrease in our revenues. Telecom taxes have also seen a big decrease. Our park taxes, it went away for a year or two, but it's back up to where we anticipate. It's like last year we had $56,000. Our property taxes, I think, to me, is a very telling one, where in 2016 we realized $992,277 in property taxes. That includes the golf course debt service. In 2019, so 4 years later, we have $1,033,009. So in 4 years, our property taxes, we only recognized $41,000 in new money over this course of 4 years. Sales tax was where we saw the most growth. We saw about $200,000 in new money from 2016 to 2019. And then in franchise taxes, we saw a net decrease as well. Overall, our general fund revenues for those six items went from, in 2016, from $2.88 million to $3.04 million. Now, that is an increase. That's the right direction. But the issue is that during that time, we've also, as a staff, tried to absorb where we can. And we've tried to make cuts where we can. We've changed positions. There's been a number of positions that when a full-time individual has left the city, we've tried to turn it into, I can think of one instance where we eliminated a position altogether. That was my former position as city manager. There was one time where we split it into kind of part-time people, and there was one time where we changed it from a 40-hour working into a 30-hour full-time position. So, like I said, I think that the city is at a point where we have to decide what's most important to us. And it's going to take some real, I think, creative thinking on the staff's part, but also some realistic expectations on the staff's part. It's important to know that as a staff, we still look at our revenues and our expenditures. We're still hitting our projected revenues. We're still coming in under our projected expenditures, but things are getting tighter. So with the city, we really have to decide what's most important. Last thing I want to share here is we always try to fund, we always try to take the extra revenues and the decrease in the difference between the net revenues and the net expenditures, take that money and transfer it into capital projects fund, right? In 2015, we had a surplus of $409,000. In 2016, we had $381,000. In 2017, we had $630,000, which is a good year. Jump forward this year, $181,000. So we still have a surplus, and we're still transferring that money into the general fund. Or sorry, not transferring that money from the general fund into the capital projects fund. That capital projects fund is what funds our maintenance. It's what funds all of the projects. When the golf course fence fell down this year, that's where we went without the money. Because this is the money that we use to do our projects around the city. Tightening budget means that there's a reduced amount of money that's being transferred from the general fund into the capital projects fund. So, as a city, like I said, we have to, as a staff, be very vigilant in how we're spending taxpayer dollars. As a city council, I think that it's important that you understand the restraints that we are under and that we budget accordingly. Now, when we talk about, when we go into the next budget retreat, a lot of times the question is what do we want to do this year? And quite frankly, the question may be, what should we not be doing this year? We have to have a real hard look. Mayor and I have looked at some of the other communities that have raised property taxes, and this is not what we're proposing to do at this point. But I think the city council and the staff needs to go through the budget and make sure that we're spending money where we should be spending money. And that if Public Works has come in and say, we want to know, walk me through your budget, that they know that there's not a lot of funding. So, anyway, that's what we wanted to say. The mayor and I met with, and I bring up the driving range net today because the mayor and I met with the Harps, and we sat down in there. Well, let me back up. I went and walked around the net before the meeting for about 30 minutes, about the golf balls. I got about 30 golf balls. And I went to the meeting, maybe not fully understanding Harps' unique situation there on the corner. But when I walked into their house, they showed us Exhibit A, which is 2,000 golf balls.
These are golf balls that they say they have collected over the past 12 months outside of the fence.
Outside of the fence. And then
their yard outside of the fence and the park.
And if I do, I went to meet with Wade afterward.
You tell him thank you for bringing him back.
Thank you. No, we met with Wade, and because I want to know how we're trying to figure out how many golf balls are going over that fence. I was there on Friday night trying to look and see what was going on. There were six people hit the driving range. I didn't see any balls going over, but they were probably really decent golf. I asked Wade today. I said, "How many golfers do you think we have at the driving range in a given day?" This is probably 20-25. We estimated that the number of balls they hit was between 40 and 80, depending on if we got a small bucket or a large bucket. So we estimated about 60. I estimate that there's probably on a daily basis during the golf season there's probably about 2,500 to 3,000 balls. Harps say that they find anywhere between 15, sometimes a little 7, sometimes as high as 25, 30 balls outside of that. So we're losing about 1% balls. But this is the big one, is that even though I remember when we put these new nets in, we stated we're not going to catch any ball. We're not going to. But I do think that the city has to look at possibilities of raising that net again, putting that back on the capital projects plan. I don't know how much that's going to cost right now. I've asked, when I sat down with Wade this afternoon, I did ask him to reach out to the same company that did these nets and ask for what the cost would be on the 20-foot extension and the 30-foot extension. And I don't even know if that is even possible with those poles. So it's something that we're going to have to maybe reevaluate. So.
I will say at that meeting today, it wasn't just Mr. Harr, there was another person from that neighborhood. This is more than one person in the neighborhood that is concerned. And more than their house, what they are indicating their concern is for the people that are walking along the trail there and people driving. And while the meeting ended on a good note, It was a tense meeting, it ended on a good note, but I would also tell the council that based on the information provided to us, it is clear that the neighborhood is documenting how many times they're telling the city that this is an unsafe problem, or this is an issue for the city. And so they're clearly, so if someone gets hurt, they're in the line.
We don't, I don't know, I don't know, I can't answer that.
That's debatable, you can't say that.
But the.
Can't say, the person that hit the ball, hang on, the person that hit the ball is responsible for that, not the city.
But.
That doesn't, I agree with you, I don't believe that there's a city from being a recipient of class actions. Anyway, exhibit B was their broken kitchen window. But I'm not gonna get into any of that. I just wanna know, I just want the council to know that it, as a staff, we are putting together some, trying to get some numbers on what that costs to reevaluate that.
John, I think, now I am against putting any more money on that fence. They came to us with a proposal, we did exactly as they asked, and then they come back and more and more and more. My belief is, they built their houses exactly where they built it, knowing that the golf course is right there. There's just so much we can do. There's just so much. If we raise those nets, they're still gonna hit them more, and we're gonna get people back in 6 months saying, we need higher nets. I would say, maybe relocate the driving range. I don't know because I'm not, that's Greg's thing, but to put more money into the fences, it's just not working. We've done it time and time again. We've raised them, we've changed this, we've done that, we've gone and people have expressed, well, do this. We've done it. Raising the nets just isn't working. It hasn't worked. Maybe it's just time to find a different location for it. We have a great spot across the street that's like a dumping ground now that used to be hole number 15. Maybe we put it there because there's nobody there that lives along that. I don't know. I'm not.
Are you talking to St. Andrew?
Yeah.
And that might very well be the case, and that's maybe we're open to any of these, but I think what Chad's point is this is going to cost us something.
Yeah.
To address this problem.
Well, right, but let's get it fixed. Let's finally do something that you just talked about, you know, saving the taxpayers, spending wisely, and that. I don't know what the solution is, but I just don't want to hear we need another 100,000 for this or that for the driving range, only to see 6 months from now, oh, by the way, I never want to do this.
And this is precisely why we need to be promoting the tents. Because as a city, you feel like you did do something. And as a resident, they're feeling like you didn't fix it. And so there's kind of a clash of ideas.
But not only did we do something, we did what they suggested.
I don't think you'll ever meet this. I think the ball's already been trying to get over. Yeah, we just need to revalue the best we can.
And it's a right-hand slice, so let's look at St. Andrew, and it's going to right-hand slice where? Right into the hill that we own. Yeah.
I don't want to get too much into this because of particularly sensitive nature of it, but let's just leave it at that this is something the city has to look at. We have to at least understand the problem. There's a way to fix it. As a staff, we've talked about many options. We've talked about flipping the driving range, we've talked about moving the driving range, we've talked about altering the driving range in some way. And at this point, anything's on the table. We have to just put everything on the table and figure out what's the best cost, most cost effective solution that works best to solve the problem. I don't know what it is right now.
Do you want to talk about some of the other expenses that you and I talked about?
They're not necessarily related to the general one, but we talked about them. So, I'll go through mine. So just off the top of my head, I don't have all The city's looking at, so you've got the development of Cedar Canyon, you've got the development of Gateway, and both of them have a portion of 4700, which is the road that's probably north and south there. And both of them are adjacent to the Reinhart Oil Parts property. It's not Reinhart Oil, but it's the same owners. But in order to get traffic to flow in and out of Cedar Canyon fully, without limitations, it's necessary to have that road be completed on both sides, both the city side and the Reinhart Oil side. So part of the agreement, the settlement agreement, was that the city would work to complete that road. And we're working on that, and but there's going to be reimbursement agreements. So while the city's going to front the cost for that road, it's going to come out of the water, sewer, storm drain fund, it will be reimbursed when that other parts piece gets developed, both the Gateway and Cedar Canyon properties. But it's essential that that road is folded. You can't have a sliver of a road there for those residents, for public safety purposes, but also for just general traffic circulation purposes. So that's a big expenditure. We have the multi buyout, which we estimate is still at $28,000. And then the other big item is, and this is one we've been planning on for years and years and years, since the Harvey Park. And it's within budget. We've done a good job going at Charlotte for watching that, getting best prices on all that stuff there. The reason it looks like the park, I think, is because Charlotte worked really hard to get best prices and find the best deals and make the budget work. What are these things?
Some of these I have on my list as well from our retreat. You guys remember the street master plan? Because our city really grew rapidly all at once, most of our streets, they're sort of, what do you call it there?
Residual service life.
The residual service life all happened at the same time. So we're going to have some significant street replacements and repairs that are coming up over the next few years.
I put that one in the probably 5 to 8 years for a lot of those roads.
Public Works, they've taken on a lot of work throughout the city, which means that some of their other maintenance projects that they normally do have not been done. We're going to have to somehow get those maintenance projects back on Public Works list that has been done.
Let me touch on that real fast. I think part of the solution that we looked at for park maintenance and for landscaping maintenance really goes to helping Public Works free up some people when they're not splitting their time between parks and water and roads and everything. Some of those employees can then eliminate parks so they have more time to possibly go up day to stay focused on the water project perhaps. So there could be some good things on that.
Once American Fork Fire does our new fire station and out of our station, that will increase our public safety costs about $90,000.
Yes.
So
we're looking, probably that's 22 for that one.
Is this dependent on them passing their strip on? Okay.
At some point, the state is going to mandate that we can receive grants or bond if we need to. There is still maintenance that comes with new infrastructure that we're going to have to plan for. We need to rebuild our savings. We use quite a bit of it for Harvey Park, so rebuilding our capital projects fund. And then, of course, I know the police department and every department around the state is having this issue, but in order to keep people here at the city who have the experience that we need, obviously our pay for employees has to be competitive. And so, as I talked to Chandler about all of these things that are coming up and the things that he mentioned, I know we're in a different situation than the other city. You probably saw several cities this year went through property tax increases, or they implemented growth means, or implemented new public safety fees. We haven't had to do that yet. I don't know the last 6 years we've seen a property tax increase.
It was 2009, 2010.
We did increase our public safety fee, but I think we put a dollar per household. It wasn't a ton. Where some, I know Highland implemented theirs, I think it's $11.50 a month or something. Anyway. A lot of cities have had to either create new fees or raise taxes, and while we have not gotten to that point yet, we're not far off from it. And so, from my perspective, it's very important for us as a council, before we go back to residents and say, we need more money, we need more revenue, because we don't have our sources of revenue, that we go through all of these expenses, like Chandler said, and say, are there things that we should be outsourcing? Are there things that we should bring back in? Are there things that we can do a combination of? Are there things that we're paying for right now that we shouldn't be? Are there things that we're paying for right now that don't make sense for a city of our size? Are there things that we shouldn't be doing? We're at the moment now where we have to start having those conversations. I would feel very uncomfortable asking for a property tax increase without first going through all of that.
I agree. But it doesn't preclude us from looking at the hard facts that our costs have gone up. The cost to protect our citizens and provide roads and police and fire have gone up.
Yeah.
And there's just, that's a fact of life.
Sure.
Mike had touched on it. The things that are the most critical components of the city are the public safety and your utilities, including roads, which, according to some of those roads, not a utility, but really is. It's really something that if you don't maintain them, then you can put off maintenance.
You become Pleasant Grove.
No, you can put off maintenance, but it really does bite you in the future. You lose service life of your utilities. You lose service life on your roads. So if we say, you know what, one year we're not gonna crack sewer, 1 year we're not gonna do an overlay on a road, well, that loss in a year probably is more detrimental. We have and Jeff, that the roads are the way that they are. They've done a great job of keeping the roads in good shape. We have a couple roads that need some TLC, but overall the city does very well. Comparison to all the cities around us, but that's what you have to look at each of the critical components, and you have to say what can we do, what should we do, and you might get through the budget and say, gosh, there's a lot less here, there's not a lot of flexibility here, there's not as much flexibility here as I thought. If you're looking at new expenditures for staff. New major expenditures for staff in terms of new programs or new swanky new tools that we get, whether it's a computer program or something, they're really limited out of the general fund. We've paid for new equipment out of the water sewer funds, which have been really beneficial to the city. We purchased a vac truck this last year ago, and what that allowed us to do is we have certain amounts of storm drain maintenance that we have to do throughout the city in order to comply with the EPA guidelines. Jeff has to document all of the storm drain maintenance that they're doing as a department. And one of the things that they did, they had an old, it's called Ditch Witch. You probably saw them out there, had a big hose that they put down in the storm drain and sucked out all of the muck that lands in there. And they had a 4-inch hose, and anytime there was a pop can or a bottle or anything, they'd have to turn the machine on, like get the hose and then turn it on and get unplug it. And it became very cumbersome to suck out the storm drains. Well, we got the back truck, and that was a big expense, but we went from sucking out 42 tons a month out of the storm drain system to last year with the back truck, we ended up sucking out 67 tons.
Somewhere in there, yeah.
So it's amazingly more efficient for us. So there's probably efficiencies to be gained in other areas, but that's just one example. But some of these things that you don't think of, like the storm drain maintenance, it is actually required by not state law, but federal law. And it's applied in state law. We have to do an annual report. But some of these things, they're not want to do, should we do, it's have to do. So looking at the list of lithium services and lithium tasks that we do as a city, many of them are just required. So we have to keep that in mind as well.
So can I ask you how many positions are open currently at our city right now?
Open?
That you're looking for, actively recruiting for employees.
Actually, full staff right now.
And that one for retirement coming up.
We have retirement coming up in January, but that's it.
But I have noticed that we've had a hard time retaining a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I know it's because we're not competitive. So that's another reason we need to look at some hard
questions.
We are more competitive now than we were 2 or 3 years ago. And I would say that we're doing a lot better in that regard. I think one of the things that we've heard is that the amount of tasks that's required of we have a lot of turnover in public works, so we just, right, that's the department that probably most turn on. And that's because we ask a lot of them. And yeah, they can go, they're asked to jump in the sewer, they're asked to clean in the storm drains, they're asked to fix water leaks, they're asked to check on water leaks and problems. Like, they can go through the list. I mean, today they were in a big muddy pit for the whole morning, fixing a water ladder that broke. They can go to another city where the amount of stress, what they're facing every day at their job, is a lot less. We've seen a number of people for that for years.
We've pushed a lot more public works without giving them the form of staff. We've taken more responsibility than not all the time.
And this is a fine balance that every city has to face in terms of you grow as a city in various ways, whether it's new subdivisions or new parks or whatever it is. You grow, but each growth requires maintenance. It just does. Every street you have has water lines in it. It has sewer lines, even though we're not the ones cleaning those, we have to coordinate with them. We have PI lines, we have road that need to be maintained. It has curb, gutter, sidewalk, it has street lights, it has possibly park strips, it has, so you think about the things that we're looking at, one road, that's a lot of work. So that's important. And so you have to really ask yourself, and I thought about this a lot, is what kind of community do you really want? I think the reason that Cedar Hills has been a really great community is because of the level of service that Public Works gives around the community in terms of making, we have a nice community here. And I think that's really what I'm getting at. Between Public Works on the streets and street right-of-ways and even with golf, they've done, they're in the same situation, it's a different park, a different fund, but it's the same situation where they're asked to keep the course looking really well, and we get a lot of compliments on the course. They've done a brilliant job, but they're on a shoestring budget, so they do amazing work, but it's getting harder and harder every year. And I'm not coming here to say this just because we want more money, I'm just asking that you understand the situation that we're in.
So, trying to remember from past budget presentations that we're projecting out the future, I thought we had a schedule on some of those of estimated fee increases.
Yes, that's for the water sewer, the utility fees,
okay,
which don't go into the general fund.
No, but if there is anything that needs to happen on here's why I'd like to see us put something like that together, just because. It helps so much better with communication with where the city's at, where the city's going.
Yeah, that's a good point. If I were to look at the water sewer fund, you guys have control of utility rates. It's really easy to do a study and say this utility costs this much to operate, maintain, and do the capital projects for the future. And we can control it. But if I'm looking at the general fund revenues that we're just talking about, the motor vehicle tax is not set by us, the telecom taxes. Now, they're set up by us up to a certain point, and I think we're at the highest right now. The park taxes, we adopt that, then that rate is set by law. Sales tax, that formula is at stake, and it's always being toyed with in terms of how that point of sale allocation versus population distribution happens throughout the state. And every year you kind of just watch that and make sure and hope that doesn't go against your favor. Franchise taxes, those are also set. So really the only general fund revenue that you have control of is the property tax.
For implementing fees,
which might give a public safety fee, you can have a streetlight fee, but that's not where we are right now. But.
And that's going to be a discussion about the legislature this year as well, to see if you don't put the growth from the city over there will be. And so the legislature will be talking about whether or not they even are going to allow some super fees. Preliminary standpoint, I'm thinking that they probably will, but we don't know yet.
We don't know. But that's what we're watching closely. I know that a lot of cities are watching that closely for various fees, whether it's an open space fee, a telecommunications fee, or a safety fee, road fee. Lots of cities have unique fees that they charge.
Yeah, I think for the stuff that we do have control, we should have
post cycle going out a couple of years, so it's very easy to communicate where things are going, so, or anyone that would ask that by us.
Right.
If there is a need for, and I think that's where you can show your, if there is an estimated need in the future for something like, or a street light or whatever those would look like, just have those ballpark out there down the road.
Yes.
Like I said, I want to reiterate that the city, we stay within our budget. We don't exceed our expenditures. We have always hit our revenues, and it's really nice that Charlotte has taken a very conservative approach to budgeting by rolling 3-year averages rather than saying, well, last year we made $10 and the year before we made 8, so maybe this next year we're going to take 12. It's done a very more pragmatic approach that I think has really benefited the city, because at the end of the day, there still is money being transferred into the capital projects fund. But as we've seen that decrease, I think it's important that the city council understand that, because at some point, there's going to be a juncture where that is they're almost what we know transfer into the general fund, or for the general fund the capital projects fund. And at that point, you're really having to decide what maintenance is most important, what capital project is most important. You have to do that anyway, but it becomes a lot more difficult at that moment.
Well, and it's not good policy funding for the future. If you don't have a balance in your capital projects fund and all emergencies or anything.
That like I said, that was sobering, but I do believe there are solutions.
Just, I think it's the challenge for any city in our situation where we're not growing, so we're not getting any impact fees. There just isn't any growth ready to come in. So we need to.
I think this is something every city faces at one point or another in various ways.
Let's go back to the very beginning about public works taking on the parks. Are we set up for that? Like, do we need to purchase more equipment? Are they good to go? What's that going to entail?
Yeah, that's a good question. So at this very moment right now, at this very second, no. But what we're projecting is that what we'll be able to do is that with the money we're saving by not being the principal, taking that, reallocating that, we can use some more pool funds to purchase the necessary equipment, which is a big capital outlay at the very beginning. But that's something that is not necessary for year over year. However, in order to fund it or to staff it, we're looking at a new full-time employee and then a part-time employee. Then reallocating one of our current employees over to parks. The reason we would do that is because our current estimates based on year-over-year trends of where their hours are being spent, we estimate that there's about 2,000 hours being spent currently among our full-time public works staff in maintaining the parks. So that's the one FTE. Right. So we want to take that one FTE, put them over parks, and then add enough people to do maintenance in the parks, and then give them the ability to hire seasonal people throughout the summer to help with some of the other tasks.
I was just going to say, for motor pool specifically, we have savings of almost $600,000 put away, so we can handle these, so we don't have to pay due debt. And it's bad for Zions, it's good for us.
What is the contract with Chris in?
It's a year over year contract. It has a 90-day out clause.
And does he know what we can?
We talked about it.
Okay, yeah, let's not leave him hanging.
No. I told him, I met with him and Jeff and Kevin 2 weeks ago, and I told him I would have an answer by the end of this week.
Just so he can go out and find more work somewhere else if he needs.
It's a calendar year thing, not a fiscal year.
His is a calendar year. Yes.
But he pretty much stopped snowing in October, so.
Yeah.
So from the months of really end of October through March, our invoices are very, very small. But my big concern, let me reiterate, my big concern is with the general fund, not with the other funds. We also see some pretty stagnant revenues, not stagnant, but pretty flat. They're not growing. So we can look at that. But the general fund is really the fund that I wanted to update the council on, get you to understand in terms of where we're going, what we may need to do. So, I know this is just a preliminary discussion, but I feel like it's important to understand the health of the city's finances We still have, like I said, we're meeting our obligations, but we see tough decisions to be made on the horizon.
See my family, that's the whole float away.
It was beautiful while last year at fundraising.
There you go.
And are there any other questions or concerns or comments? I said, I know.
I think one of you guys is doing an amazing job with the very interesting challenge.
Let's give it one shot.
Yeah. I mean, thanks for bringing these things up early, and I like that. You know, we can think about it, talk about it, prepare for it.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on into our last item, which is a discussion on city park curbs and who's better to use of city trails.
The mayor alluded to this, that there was a resident that lives near Timco Park that was concerned with the goings on after dark and even during dark hours. The complaint alleged some, wildly inappropriate behavior, some salty language that we heard. There's not much to do about that. We can call the police on the inappropriate behavior, but the one thing that we really can't control is the ability to close our parks after a certain hour. So, what we wanted to discuss with you is the possibility of changing our parks curfew between Labor Day and Memorial Day from 11 o'clock to 10 o'clock. And then as a staff, we'll work on solutions to getting that gate locked and open. There may be that gate has an automatic lock that locks the gate at 10 o'clock, and your car's not out. Obviously, the lock is at 10 o'clock, but shortly thereafter, if you don't get out, the car might be parked at night. Then opening the gate would also need to happen. So there was his discussion on your thoughts on changing the park.
And so the reason why the Labor Day, the Memorial Day option came up is because right now in our park curfew ordinance, it's closed between all of our parks are closed between the hours of 11 p.m. and 5 a.m. But then there is a separate section on amplified sound that says from Labor Day to Memorial Day, amplified sound shall be prohibited after 8:30 p.m. Sunday through Thursday and 9:30 on Friday through Saturday. And then Memorial Day to Labor Day, it goes to 9:30 Sunday through Thursday and 10:30 Friday through Saturday. So we allow for longer periods of amplified sound during the summer months. So it makes sense to, if we're gonna shorten the amplified sound, also shorten the curfew. Because I kind of thought at night through the winter, it's dark.
It's been dark for a long time. No one's gonna be in the park.
Nothing green. Yeah. Well, they are. They're just not going to nothing good is happening.
Well, nothing good is happening.
But why not like 9? Because, I mean, I look out there and it's 8 o'clock and it's cold and
it doesn't look pleasant.
Yeah, there's. I'm with Denise, there's no reason someone needs to be apart right now. I mean,
I'm not going to disagree with you.
No.
I don't want to go to park right now.
Yeah, I mean, even in the winter, like 8 o'clock, but that might be a little early, but definitely 9 o'clock.
Well, if we start changing the hours that drastically, then I think you really have to look at your sound ordinance and that.
Sound ordinance is already earlier than that, though.
Right, but you don't want to even close your park and have the sound ordinance. You have to make them agree at some level. Lieutenant.
Oh, because it's 9:30 on Friday, Saturday.
Do you know off the top of your head what American park hours are?
10:30.
Year round. We have. This is the park we get complaints about.
Yes.
If we just close that one park, or does that cover all the parks?
Close it at dark, 7.
It's a daylight hour park.
My recommendation on that, Councilman Anderson, is council member, is to pick a natural time that makes enforcing it much easier and stands up in court a little better versus just dark time.
So we could say just for Timco that it's going to close at 9.
Yep.
Labor Day through Memorial Day.
I can do earlier, 7.
So if you close the gate, but the trail runs right next to that park. You can walk right in. Are there going to be signs?
And you can exclude the trail, but really the people that are using the trail.
They're not
I'm talking about people accessing.
No, you're right. You're right.
But the issues that we're having are with people that are driving there. That those are the people that are doing things we don't want to do now.
Or can we leave the park open and just close the parking lot?
Well, that's what it would be. It would be the parking lot. The rest of the park, you can access from the trail. You can't really shut the whole park down.
Keep cars out for specific times.
Yeah.
Earlier time.
But we would still want an ordinance saying that the park is closed. So if somebody was up there without their car, or they parked in front of the homes and watched the park, and somebody calls the police can enforce it. Yeah. So we have to still come up with a time. And this is just a discussion item tonight. We'll vote on it next time, but we want to give a challenge in the direction of that time should be.
I think there's dog walkers in the morning, you know, they wake up, they take their dog out first thing in the morning, and that's because it is 5:05. So I'm okay with it. Yeah, these people, I don't think are waking up at 5 in the morning and going, hey, let's go up to the park. But it's the dog walkers. But at night, I'm good.
Are there any youth activities up there ever during the week?
That's true.
Nine
would be
good.
They close it down
at 9,
they're done at
8:30.
I kind of like 9 too.
Clean up
by
9. Are you interested in just Timco Park?
Yes. We're not having problems in the other parks, right?
Not to the same extent.
Not to the extent. Parks in general, no matter what city you're in, tend to draw a different crowd at night than it does during the day. But the more secluded areas, Timco Park has an overlook, which tends to put people to move. But definitely, that's the main problem.
It's the one park in our city that you really can't see what's going on from any of the homes. Even the other, because I live by Bay Hill Park, which is also kind of off the beaten path, but there are homes surrounding it, so we didn't see the same issues because everyone can see what's going on in the park.
Roads and passing. And when you start getting into crime prevention through environmental design, that's probably one of our worst areas in the whole city, because it doesn't allow for any of that natural surveillance from people driving by, people walking by, any lighting. There's no lighting up there, which obviously if lights were on, that sometimes can invite them to stay longer. But darkness also invites non-wanted activities. And so, you know, there's other things, you know, as well that we could look at, but I think one of the best things would be just lowering the curfew, but
can we, if we lower the curfew, why don't we post a big sign there that's red and white, that's, you know, visible, it's got reflective things on it, so this park closes at 9.
All have signs that say what the curfew is, but not typically do people stop to read the sign on the way in.
But like we just talked about that though, specifically if we're going to lock the gate, having some kind of warning to people that this gate is going to be locked.
Yeah.
So you've got to get your car out by whatever that post sign is.
What time are these
happenings?
Happenings. Yeah, occurring.
Throughout
the day, but they are typically there later at night.
It's typically 10 and later.
Okay, so were you talking about night?
Yeah, night at night is what I'm saying.
Okay. Labor Day or Memorial Day?
Yeah. And what about later time? Can you mention 11 or 10?
10, because that's when the sun goes down in the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if they want to walk in, so be it.
Yeah. I mean, the trails go through Heritage, they go through Sunset, they go through almost every park, yeah.
One of the thought is, you know, on the consistency is not only for even the individual officers that are trying to enforce it, okay, which park am I at, what time is that one, but even our residents, okay, can you be in this park this time, or you know, so I would maybe consider all or nothing versus just changing each park to have its own curfew based on.
I wouldn't do the new park.
I think for right now, I think one. I mean, I'm with Lieutenant if we start other parks, but with just one, think that's pretty bad.
It's an experiment.
The other item in the, was the governing use of the city trails, and this is with the rise of e-bikes. Right now, our code does not allow motorized vehicles, and all intents and purposes, there is a motor.
I think they should be allowed.
Right, that's what most cities are doing.
National parks are doing it too.
They're quiet, they're not.
And they're cool.
Electric.
They're super cool.
Well, and the big push from the state is that it allows families to recreate together, you know, not that much rapid can go over bike right down.
So we want to allow these, so we want to work on that code to carve out the exception to allow for electronic bikes. This obviously excludes foam heads or anything emanating sound or.
Gas power.
Gas power, but even, it still would include the golf carts. I mean, there has to be some pedal assist, there has to be some.
Has to be a bike.
Has to be a bike. I mean, we know a bike, we'll see what, right?
Well, bike and scooters. The
electric scooters.
The electric scooters, they'd be allowed as well, wouldn't they?
Scooter is a bike.
I mean, they're allowed all over downtown Salt Lake, so I mean, I think we ought to allow them on our trails.
Maybe we can get Bert to leave scooters around our city.
There you go. So we'll bring some code back on the next meeting on 15th to make some changes, propose some changes here. Yes.
That's fine. Anything else? On that, gentlemen? Yes, okay. And that's it for tonight. I'll take the motion to adjourn.
I'll make the motion to adjourn.
Motion by Councilor Ober. Is there a second?
Second.
Second is by Councilor Miller. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye. 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 Aye.